Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we have our monthly update from Washington, D.C. with our correspondent Chuck Brooks. Welcome today, Chuck. How are you?
Great, Chris. Thanks for having me on again. I really appreciate it.
Yeah,
definitely. Enjoying the Washington spring here.
Yeah, and you've been a great addition. I tell you, you get some great circulation. People are always interested in knowing what's going on, and you're the person to talk to from Washington, D.C. So give us, first of all, just give us an update on what you have going on locally there in D.C. in the cybersecurity area.
Well, I think probably the first thing, which probably has escaped a lot of people's attention, is that there's some significant changes in NIST cybersecurity framework. And, April 10th, the comment period closed for the NIST revised framework for improving critical infrastructure cybersecurity. And there's some changes that definitely affect industry and also governance. It's really basically, as people are not familiar with the NIST framework, it's really a set of objectives or standards for best practices to help organizations manage their cybersecurity risks.
Yeah.
It's a voluntary framework, but it's taken a significant role in the building of the private sector and public sector cooperation on mitigating the threat landscape, on coordinating technologies, and according policies that help against breaches and other problems associated with cybersecurity. So it's really interesting.
Can you give us some examples of what might have changed in there that we could look out for?
Yeah, well, for one thing, it's primarily qualitative before. Qualitative mainly basically defining the issues, but now they've sort of gone to the revised version of the framework. It goes more into the quantitative. They're suggesting a whole new section that would measure the performance and maturity of an organization's cyber risk programs, and then you'd have to correlate your metrics with business objectives and outcomes. So it is definitely... you have a framework inside your own industry or inside your own company now, which is a different aspect of the whole cybersecurity framework. And there's some other things too that are pretty interesting about this framework. Just quickly, I mean, it basically also addresses what is called the supply chain risk management, which is pretty common with cybersecurity because you're dealing with different vendors, different clients. And so third-party risk has become a huge problem that's been ignored. So they include this in the NIST framework. And it's interesting because I was just on a couple of months ago briefing the United States Transportation Command. And you think about it, they're probably the best example of supply chain. That they basically bring all our weapons and materials, food, et cetera, to the theater. But they don't do it entirely with military assets. They do it with private sector help. They have ships and planes and others and communications that go through the private sector. So it's a public-private partnership. And they are sort of leaders in knowing, what vulnerabilities they have on their vendors, who's looking into their systems. And it's a perfect target, obviously, for espionage. So you want to be able to sort of manage the third-party risk. And now NIST has sort of taken that model and integrated it into this framework. And one other big area, which I'm sure you really are an expert in, is an access control category. It's significantly changed in the framework. It's renamed, actually. It's called the Identity Management and Access Control category now. And it basically, makes more focus on looking at making sure that identities and credentials are managed the time they're created.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more protection. Before that, it's a huge improvement because that's one of the problems initially is you have to know who's on your system and who's doing what if they are who they say they are. And also it brings you forensic capability of knowing if there is a problem, if there's a breach, where to go. So that's significant, I think, you know, with the NIST, whole NIST framework being changed. It's basically, it's a good thing because, like I said, it's voluntary, but it's taking a life of its own. Mm-hmm. You know, NIST is part of the Department of Commerce, but they work closely with the DHS. So, I'm sort of optimistic about these changes, and we'll see them implemented, hopefully, within a couple months and basically codified.
That sounds great. Let's take a break real quick hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Thanks for joining today. We have Chuck Brooks on again with our Washington, D.C. cyber updates. Before the break, we were talking about the NIST framework changes, but you also keep pretty close eye on DHS and the Department of Homeland Security, and there's been a lot of happening there in cybersecurity. Give us an update from that perspective there, Chuck.
Yeah, there are a couple areas here one is DHS Secretary John Kelly really gave one of his first big speeches on his perception of the tech sector to fight cybersecurity, and he came out with right out of the gate saying that American government can't do it alone, and this effort takes the private sector and ingenuity and technology and cooperation to make cybersecurity effective, and it basically, you know, that we have to upgrade our digital, his quote is, we must upgrade our digital weapon uses, defend against the federal networks and from nation state and criminal hackers. So it's going to be sort of the first stepping stone. I mean, we've all been waiting for the Trump executive order, and it has not come out yet. It was supposed to come out in 90 days, but I'm not really one of those people that are complaining about that. It takes a long time just to get your ducks in order and see who's who and what in these various agencies. And I thought it was unrealistic to get an order out on such a magnitude of cybersecurity. It's a very, as you know, a very complicated area. But there have been three versions already of the Trump order. And I know for a fact now, at least in the last two ones, private sector has been significantly involved. And so I think we're going to see what happens with former Mayor Giuliani's group. Not much has been disclosed about what they're doing, and also what the National Security Council is doing. And DHS's input into this area, but I think something's coming along that path. And I think Secretary Kelly's first, you know, sort of public pronouncement on the cooperation aspect between the private sector is sort of a barometer of things to come.
Okay, so first step that, you know, everybody listening is always looking for, especially if you're making money or in government contracting. Right now, we have a hiring freeze. We have a RFP freeze coming out for grants and stuff that companies use for their lifeblood that they're, you know, expecting on certain times of the year, and everything's kind of been on hold. Have we had any word on what moving forward looks like with the federal government with all this spending that they've allotted? And we've heard some awfully big numbers, but when does that come out to the people who are actually going to implement?
Well, you know, it's a triple process because having been on the other side, I spent 8 years on Capitol Hill. Every president proposes a budget, and the budget is put together by policy experts. It involves, obviously, political aspects and other things. But we're right after election, and you're right, there is a hiring freeze, and that was in more of an executive order. It has impact. Particularly with attracting the right cyber people into government, which is a huge problem. But I think these problems are starting to be recognized, that you have to pay people more from the outside and that some of these things have to be revised. But the whole budget aspect is going to come down to a play with inside the appropriations and authorization aspects from Congress. It's a process. So it's really more comes down to not partisan, but it comes down to constituents' actions and activities. So this is just sort of a blueprint, what they want and what they hope to do. And it may be far-reaching, but it's not going to be the final product. You'll see a completely different outcome when it comes down to the final asset authorization or and appropriations, particularly a bill for running government. In the meantime, you know, we've been doing this running government by extending, you know, basically annual budgets without initiating new ones. So it's been an interesting way of doing business, but I think a lot of this has changed, and I'm not I don't have much I don't know if anyone does. I'm not an oracle in terms of what the new administration wants to do, but I think they're finding their way, and it's just a lot to happen in a short period of time to really take over reins of a government when you really only have like a third of your people in place. It's very difficult. So I'd say that's you know, there's a lot of other big agenda items that are going to probably happen first with tax reform and maybe a revisit of health care. But in terms of national security and the cybersecurity budget and stuff like that, this is going to be going on for a long time. And I think these are need to be issues that are more deliberate and slower for good reason, because they're not as, you know, they're more gray areas and there's a lot of aspects to them and very complicated issues.
Okay, let's take a break real quick for our sponsors, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. We're talking to Chuck Brooks with our DC Cyber Update. And Chuck, before the break, we were talking about, you know, what's going on with the hiring freezes, the RFPs, the money coming out of the government. And, you know, when I look at it, you know, I'm in a very military-focused area here in Colorado, at least Colorado Springs. And right now they're on a hiring freeze, but people are still leaving. So, you know, if this lasts too long, we end up in a situation where we're worse off than before it started. What do you think to say about that type of stuff?
Well, I mean, I think in certain areas, yes, particularly with national security, like I said earlier, you know, there's one of the worst things I think that happened to govern was sequestration, you know, where they limited spending on areas. And you can't really do that and run a national security policy, because you never know what the threats are on the landscape and what they come up with, what they're going to cost. That's just the way it is. And as I said earlier, that we've been running by continuing resolution, the government, which is a problem. I think the freezes will end. I think they had a plan to reduce government through attrition. But the problem with doing that, of course, is that they're vital services that the country needs. And then they're definitely a lot of waste. And it doesn't necessarily differentiate when you do a blanket order.
Yeah.
I think it really has to go down to being more of a you know, qualitative effort, where you go through and you look at where certain security functions in certain industry and critical infrastructure areas important to the government, you know, have to be upgraded and have to be hire more better people, and that's cybersecurity being one of them. But there are plenty of other parts of the government that may be wasteful, but you can't just do it in a generic sort of freeze. And I think they'll change that. I think they're just basically looking at things as coming in and trying to get a grasp on where things are. But there'll be a lot of metamorphosis going on in the government in the next few months. Again, not just alone through the administration, but through Congress too. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and you mentioned protecting the grid, critical infrastructure, and you know that's always what I want to hear. Any updates on that? I think you said you had a couple things that you had seen, heard coming up on the grid
protection.
There
was an order, basically BAE was given a contract to protect the grid. Sorry about that. The computer went off. the grid. Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Yep, go ahead.
Sorry about that. Yeah, my computer went off. BAE got it to protect the grid. They realized that the threat, the grid is very much unprotected in terms not only of cybersecurity, but of physical aspects. It's 35, 40 years old. A lot of the technology is legacy technology. They saw that with particularly with the North Korea incidents, that there's a vulnerability there. And I think a contract was looked at earlier, but it was announced in a big way. So BAE is taking on that role, particularly of looking where the vulnerabilities are and looking for fixes. So that's an interesting area in itself. And I think, you know, I think energy is an important aspect, whether it be our grid, our nuclear capabilities. You know, if you don't, there's a study done several years ago that if we went dark from a solar flare or from an incident where our grid was taken out, that up to 100 million people could die. So it's a very serious issue, and very few administrations have taken a serious look at the grid. There's an element in Congress that's been pushing it. I know Jim Woolsey, former director of the CIA, and Ted Koppel, of all people, wrote a book on it. So it's a real issue, I think, that needs to be looked at. And, you know, you have to start with the critical infrastructure if you want to be a real strong in the future and a superpower and look at the technological implementation changes that need to be made. And certainly the grid is a starting point.
Yeah. So BAE's contract, is that what agency in the government is handling that work?
It's Department of Energy, but it's also, I think, there's a Department of DOD aspect to it, too.
Okay, so it's a joint agency.
Yeah. Now, there are parts of the grid that are protected by DOD already that are off the grid, but they're part of the grid. but DOE manages the grid primarily, and, of course, you know, you have the utilities that basically operate the grid.
Yeah.
So it is a public-private sector program.
Yeah. So anything else that you have going on, you personally, or things in Washington, D.C. that we can give the listeners an update on?
Well, yeah, so I was named a chairman of CompTIA's New and Emerging Technologies Committee, which is exciting for me because CompTIA, as many people know, is probably the largest organization doing certifications for cybersecurity for many years. But they also recently bought Tech America, which is an advocacy organization that gets involved in policy. So to be able to sort of play a role and impact on new and emerging technologies across government is an interesting thing for me to do, and it's a volunteer position, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, well, I guess personal congratulations are in order for that. I know you write a lot. Anything that listeners might want to check out that you've published here recently that might be worthwhile?
Yeah, I had a piece that's now currently out in the Alien Vault on insider threats and cybersecurity. Alien Vault's a great resource for those of you who want to learn about sort of the interesting happenings in cybersecurity. And also the Performant Console on a cheat sheet for executives in the C-suite on cybersecurity that came out a couple days ago. And that's that was actually fun to write. It's a different sort of perspective as a legal group. So those are my two latest.
Where could we find that latest one?
Under Performance Console, if you Google it, or if you go to my LinkedIn profile, I have it up there too. Or if you even want to, basically, it's also on my Twitter, which is at Chuck D. Brooks.
Okay. So there we can get a hold of Chuck, find his LinkedIn, link with him, myself as well. Anybody that's wanting to keep up with what's going on, we definitely put out a lot of different things, and we have the weekly updates here, weekly podcast here from New Cyber Frontier, as well as the monthly updates from DC with Chuck Brooks. Chuck, just in closing, anything else you wanted to put out?
No, just everyone have a great weekend. But I did want to mention something. There is one little thing I forgot to speak about. There is a little bit of controversy at DHS with the latest order that Secretary Johnson put out on protecting the electoral system, this critical infrastructure. The states rebelled against that. It's not a partisan issue, but there's a whole movement among of governors and secretaries of state that don't want the election system to be under the federal government. And it really goes down to more of a constitutional issue than a security issue. But it's an interesting to see that it is sort of another example that nothing's easy. There's so many political and policy aspects of things that even if they seem to make sense, sometimes they may not.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that input, and we definitely look forward to hearing from you next month. But thanks you for joining today, Chuck.
I appreciate you having me on.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.